Hello and welcome to the podcast, The Lotus Eaters, for the 17th of August, 2021. I'm joined by Josh.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about Biden's defeat speech, the terrorist railroads, and also Eaton's free speech victory. I thought we'd end on a white pill rather than just all the Taliban stuff, but that's what we're going to get into today. But the first things I want to mention, so the live events. So we mentioned this yesterday. You can buy tickets now to the live events that we're setting up in, I think it's in South London. I'm allowed to say that. That's the location. So if you buy tickets, you'll be sent the location the day before. And we're having Dankula down. And they will be the 24th of September and 25th of September. Details there, or get in contact, and we'll be able to help out there. But anyway, so go and check that out. The other thing I want to mention was the Chris Williamson interview we had. So Chris Williamson, for people who don't know, he was on Love Island, and then realized, like, oh, what am I doing? Like, literally, I've seen people comparing it to the Kuma meme, where he was, like, living the high life status-wise for, like, a lad, you know, knew all the clubs, high status, everyone has to go through him. You know, he's making money, he's doing well. But then he sort of realized, like, what am I doing with my life? Like, it doesn't seem to have much value. So now he talks about in here, which is a particularly starking moment for me, when he talked about the fact that since he started making his YouTube channel, he realized, like, people will comment, like, you know, I've been listening to this, you make great points, you know, I've changed something in my life. You'd never get that from people walking in the club. Like, no one goes in the club and is like, well, I did the Jaeger bombs, and then, well, I mean, you changed my life, man. Just doesn't happen.
I know, there's nothing more depressing. I worked in a bar when I was at uni, and my God, the actual nature of the work makes you lose all faith in humanity. So no wonder he did something like that.
But anyway, he's great. Go and subscribe to his channel. Go and support him. He's fantastic. But there's the interview with Carl. Sign up to lotuseaters.com to get access to that. It's good fun. We have some clips on the YouTube channel and whatnot as well, if you just want to get the clips. Next thing to mention is the Hat and Tash interview we did. So this is the lady who was at Speaker's Corner. She's, I believe she left Islam. And she'd become a Christian. And she went down Speaker's Corner for several years now. And she's been preaching that not too much about Christ, but instead that Islam is wrong. Here's the reasons why. Canonically, you know, she understands the stuff way better than any Westerner usually does because she's born and raised in it. And this was the problem, in my opinion, that she ended up getting attacked multiple times. The specific attack in where she's been stabbed, the police haven't identified a suspect, so we're not going to speculate on that. But go and check that out. She's a hell of a trooper, and if you're ever down in Speaker's Corner on a Sunday, apparently that's when she's down, so go and say hi. But anyway, without further ado.
Tomorrow I'll be doing a podcast with Stella Parrott, who is a cartoonist or former cartoonist for the Morning Star, who got cancelled for a supposed transphobic cartoon. So we'll be talking about that as well as other things as well.
All right.
And also another thing before you get started, sorry to hold you up again, is that there'll be an extra day of video comments to record because we won't be doing them tomorrow. So it'll be you talking to, is it Peter from Hearts of Oak?
Yeah, Peter McAvenna.
So you'll be talking to him on both Thursday and Friday on the podcast. So if you have any questions for them, rather than submitting them for tomorrow, you can do them on Thursday and Friday. Yeah.
All right. Anyway, sorry. I've got a lot of stuff. That's why I'm edging for Biden's defeat speech, which I was interested they actually at least gave a speech. Anyway. So I thought we'd start with going through some of the stuff leading up to Biden's defeat speech. We'll get into that in a minute, don't worry. But I thought we'd start with an update from Miles the Mad Lad, the absolute nutcase who went to Kabul during the war and decided to have fun. So here's the first thing here. So the first update being from the Times. A student who took a holiday to Afghanistan has narrowly avoided death at the hands of the Taliban. When asked where he was from, Miles said that he was from Wales rather than Britain. As fighters did not know where Wales was, they let him go. the cheeky chappy. I mean, like, I'm sure there's plenty of criticisms for him, but I mean, every single time I'm just like, yeah, you know what, he comes off as such an eccentric British explorer for the 1900s.
Is he actually from Wales? I've heard a little bit about what he's been up to.
I don't know. I don't think so, which makes it even funnier, but whatever. So that's one of the updates. The update is good, though. The other one here, being the next one, if we can get it up, which is him being evacuated, so he's now out. So this is Remy. I also love how Remy, I don't know if people know Remy, he's a YouTuber who makes a lot of good gaming content, and now is doing, you know, this, which a hell of a crossover. Anyway, but he did the update here. Miles has been evacuated, whether that means from Afghanistan or his current safe house was unclear at the time of this post. He says, I got evacuated at 4-ish with 100 or so other civilians. Couldn't message as there were cars emitting signals that would set off bombs. It blocked my AirPods from connecting, so I think it blocked all Wi-Fi and data. The Taliban let us go through to the airport, and we met many of them. Very long transition period, but everyone was smiling and waving at one another. Some even took selfies with them. With the Taliban.
What? So the people we were evacuating were taking selfies with the Taliban?
Yeah.
That's reassuring.
The Taliban. Great. He also mentions in an article that's now deleted because of a cock-up, is that he was also being escorted by the Taliban. Like, their group of Westerners were escorted by the Taliban to the airfield.
So,
which,
like,
is amazing.
So we're evacuating you from the Taliban with a Taliban escort.
Yes.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, he says, I slept on a dirt road and woke up as cars went by. We're in a new safe house. We're all hydrated, happy to get a few hours of sleep. And if we go to his Facebook page, he's posted on here. There are a couple of links. Oh, God, there's a new one as well. So if we scroll down a bit, there's a post in which he says, on the flight out, we weren't allowed to any liquids, no razors, only one bag up to 10 kilograms. So everyone is tossing their belongings into a pile. People are donating each other their items because they can't carry them. Some lads stuffed my body armor with bags full of protein bars. Over 20 of them. Very happy right now. Thank you, lads. Again, I mean, the way he posts is just so charming. I can't be mad. He also says here that he found a bottle of Canadian syrup in disposal and downed a third of it before being searched. Happy days.
Wait, what? I like maple syrup, just drinking it before getting on the plane.
And then here's him uploading some of the footage, which is new. We're only just seeing this, of him uploading the footage of him on the plane, getting out. Landed in Dubai, he says. So, with the British Army. So, Miles is safe. Miles is out of Afghanistan. So, the mad lad has made it home. Good God, that's one hell of a story to tell your kids, isn't it? Anyway, let's get into Biden's defeat speech, the main subject. So, Biden gave a speech yesterday, even though he said he wouldn't give one in for a while. He said, in the next few days, I'll give one, and then gave one yesterday. Presumably because everyone was noticing, buddy, you're the president. Maybe you should say something. And there have been mixed responses to this speech that I've seen. And my gut feeling is I'm not terribly impressed. And also, it was never going to be that good anyway, because you have to give a speech about the fact that you lost. I mean, that was never going to be well, was it? So go and watch the full thing in your full time if you want to, but we're going to cut it down for the sake of time as well. So I've seen this being shared a lot for the preamble of this, so we go to the next one, his tweet. So him saying in here that he takes full responsibility, unlike other presidents. I won't blame others. Yeah, that's going to be the theme of this. Also, we had some news beforehand that he was going to take pre-approved questions from the press. So we go to the next one. We can see a White House correspondent for the Daily Caller. He'll be taking questions only from pre-approved media.
That's not really media then, is it? If it's pre-approved, you're not really holding the president accountable. You're just being his lapdog.
Yeah. So let's get to the first clip in which he spent the first section of his speech blaming Trump for this.
When I came into office, I inherited a deal that President Trump negotiated with the Taliban. Under his agreement, U.S. forces would be out of Afghanistan by May 1, 2021, just a little over 3 months after I took office. U.S. forces had already drawn down during the Trump administration from roughly 15,500 American forces to 2,500 troops in country. And the Taliban was at its strongest militarily since 2001. The choice I had to make as your president was either to follow through on that agreement or be prepared to go back to fighting the Taliban in the middle of the spring fighting season. There would have been no ceasefire after May 1. There was no agreement protecting our forces after May 1. There was no status quo of stability without American casualties after May 1. There was only a cold reality of either following through on the agreement to withdraw our forces or escalating the conflict and sending thousands more American troops back into combat in Afghanistan.
So why did you stay? I mean, this is the bit I don't get. Like, he's laying this out as if it's a dunk on Trump, and I'm like, no, that proves his point.
Didn't he extend it to September 11th, right?
Yeah. So Trump's plan was to get out on May 1, as he says, because he wanted to avoid the situation falling into an S show. Like, doesn't want to be there for if it's going to collapse. Therefore, get all the Westerners out. And therefore, if it does start to collapse months after, as it has, then you could say, well, okay, then we have time to evacuate people properly, and it's not going to be a cluster F as it was. So that was the plan from Trump, and he has essentially has told us that's true. Like, no, I'm going to stay longer. Why? Well, he didn't have a reason for it at all. Anyway, so Biden moved the date, as you mentioned. He moved it to September 11th for the evacuation for seemingly no reason. Like, I've not seen
certainly
him give
a
one.
Symbolic reason, right? It's a symbolic date, 20 years, September 11th, right?
the only thing I can see is the optics and be like, yeah, I got us out on September 11, which I, as a foreigner, that looks really weird anyway to have as a celebratory date, but good God, whatever. So if we go to the next link here, you can see, sorry, the Red State article, you can see we have in March, he blamed Trump for negotiating the deal badly, as in we had to get out by May. That was the deal. And for some reason, he wasn't happy with that. He doesn't explain in here why he's not happy with that. And if we go to the next link, you see The Guardian, just to prove my claims here. He was the one who moved it to September 11. He did this. That's his fault. So him trying to make up this narrative of Trump wanted us out, therefore the botched execution is Trump's fault, doesn't make any sense. Everyone wanted us out, but the botched operation comes to your decision to stay longer than was needed. That's Trump's criticism of his situation, and that's true. That's just demonstrably true by the looks of it to me.
Well, it seems like the rushing, they left lots of stuff behind, because you've seen the images of all of the stuff, the American equipment that the Taliban have, likely through stuff that's left behind, but as well as the Afghan military, they are obviously given equipment as well. They wouldn't have all that stuff, or at least less of it, had they withdrawn sooner, and that's a good argument.
Also, you wouldn't have the situation of desperately trying to get thousands and thousands.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't have people.
You've already measured it.
Yeah, you wouldn't have people jumping onto American airplanes that are flying away and clinging on until they fall off.
Yeah, because everyone had already left. Mm. There is the argument that the things might have collapsed sooner, sure, but if you're already out by May, it doesn't really matter if it's a month sooner than it turned out to be in our situation. So we go to the next clip in which he blames the Afghan army for being crap.
I always promised the American people that I would be straight with you. The truth is, this did unfold more quickly than we had anticipated. So what's happened? Afghanistan political leaders gave up and fled the country. The Afghan military collapsed, sometime without trying to fight. We spent over $1 trillion. We trained and equipped an Afghan military force of some 300,000 strong. Incredibly well equipped. A force larger in size than the militaries of many of our NATO allies. We gave them every tool they could need. We paid their salaries, provided for the maintenance of their air force, something the Taliban doesn't have. Taliban does not have an air force. We provided close air support. We gave them every chance to determine their own future. We could not provide them was the will to fight for that future. There's some very brave and capable Afghan special forces units and soldiers. But if Afghanistan is unable to mount any real resistance to the Taliban now, there is no chance that 1 year, one more year, five more years, or 20 more years, the U.S. military boots in the ground would have made any difference.
I know that was a bit long, but I mean, who can argue with that?
No, I very much agree. I mean, it was only not too long ago that I was predicting, there's no way this prediction really didn't go well, did it? Because I was just like, well, look at the numbers, look at the equipment. There's no way that they could be beaten. And then literally a week later, there they are with their tails between their legs. So yeah, turns out, don't listen to me when it comes to conflicts about in the Middle East. Apparently, I don't know anything.
I'm feeling smug because I was right. But to get back to his speech, because he argues that they're crap. They were. They had every advantage. They did. But what they did not have was the will to fight. And the Americans and the West can't provide that. That is up to them. And they did not.
It is amazing how incompetent the Afghan army are, though.
Like,
I saw a video of them doing jumping jacks. I think it's been going around for years. But they can't even do that. They can't even, you know.
Look, when you're high on heroin, I'm sure it's very hard. So that's the thing. But you see that he's trying to steer the conversation, and this was a theme throughout the entire episode, in which he steered the conversation to being that, well, we have to leave Afghanistan, therefore I've done the right thing. Like, that's not the criticism. That might be the criticism from, like, neocons and neolibs who, for some reason, want to go back in for another 50 years to forever. But everyone else is saying, no, everyone agrees we're going to leave. Everyone's agreed to this. What's wrong is the fact that you reset the date, and now you won't own it. Anyway, so let's go to the next clip in which he tries to make this point even more stark.
So I'm left again to ask of those who argue that we should stay, how many more generations of America's daughters and sons would you have me send to fight Afghanistan's civil war when Afghan troops will not?
Good point. But also, who's making that argument? Who is seriously making the argument that we should go back in for another 10 years?
I certainly have seen people, obviously not for 10 years specifically, but say we never should have left in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen some Conservative MPs on occasion, or I think it's Dan Crenshaw is very mad about all this. And understandable, I mean, with the background of being in the military. But they're just wrong. Everyone can see that it's wrong. We are to leave. No one is making the argument seriously that we should stay for another 10 years in mass. The argument is, you cocked this up. Your evacuation was your fault because you changed the date, ended up causing a bottleneck there. So he just takes no responsibility for it. If we go to the next one as well, remember the pre-approved questions? Yeah, nah.
And all brave Americans serving in harm's way.
So he just walked off. Doesn't even answer any questions.
Mr. President, what do you make of the Afghans clinging to the aircraft?
No, no questions. Not even the pre-approved questions. Just leaves. Just like, nah, see ya. I'm not doing it.
Just forget?
He just left. And the thing is, he's a very busy man. I mean, he's president of the United States. I mean, he's got stuff to do. Like, go back on holiday. I mean, this is Jack Posobiec posting here, his schedule that's public. And as you can see, delivers remarks on Afghanistan and then had more time he could have spared, but was just left back to go to Camp David. Just can't be bothered leaving. I mean, it is embarrassing.
So is that just where they go for their time off? I don't really know too much about it.
Apparently, yeah. But the thing there, I mean, like, good him saying that we had to leave, but who seriously is opposing that statement? The rest of it...
A small minority, yeah.
And refusing to take responsibility, refusing to address the criticism, and also refusing to take any questions because, wow, he could just go back on holiday, can't he? I mean, just an utter embarrassment of a man. Anyway, so there's also some statements Jack Posobiec's been posting from some guys who apparently work at Intel who are saying that he's talking BS. Because the other part here is that he's claiming, well, it collapsed faster than we could have predicted. And publicly, we've seen a bunch of intelligence agencies say, you know, it would have been 90 days until it collapsed. Apparently, they've been getting reports endlessly, day after day, about the situation on the ground. And the people involved are like, no. So he says in here, for months leading up to the Afghan National Army surrendering, they were surrendering in literally hundreds, sometimes thousands at a time to the Taliban all over the country. So the president would have been getting those reports as well. And yet, changed nothing. Just ignored them, which... Great. So you compare this to Trump. Remember Trump? His response to a situation like this? I love this comparison here by this lady. When Qassem Soleimani effed with our embassy and our people, Trump had him turned into salsa and sent back to Tehran in a box flying economy. Then he threw up an American flag on Twitter. I mean, this really is the version of F around and find out that Trump's foreign policy was. And to be honest, yeah. That was way better than just being like, nah, not taking responsibility. See ya.
I mean, even the Iranians and the North Koreans and people like that acknowledged that Trump's style of negotiation and his foreign policy seemed to be effective, right?
Yeah, got stuff done.
Exactly, yeah.
So there's also Trump's response to that speech in which he says in a statement, which we can get up, it's not that we left Afghanistan, it's the grossly incompetent way that we left. Completely correct. This is his criticism. Consistently, Biden has not addressed this criticism at all. Anyway, so that's Biden's defeat speech, which, yeah, didn't go well. But let's go to Afghanistan itself. So what's been going on since we all were looking at Biden? Not great. So we have some pictures here of the airplanes still evacuating hundreds and hundreds of civilians. Awful lot of men, I must say. Many of them probably Afghan National Army. I mean, I don't know how we're identifying any of these people. I don't know where they're going either.
Are these asylum claimants, then? Because if they were, you know, interpreters or contractors or something like that, it would make sense that they're all men because they're working with the military, right?
Yeah, but there doesn't seem to be any way to verify any of these people. Mm-hmm. Apparently, this is the largest amount of people they've ever had on this plane either. So
yeah, that doesn't look particularly safe, does it?
No, I think this might have been the one that had people falling off as well. But let's go to CNN and check what they've been up to, because they stayed in Kabul to hang out with the Taliban. Look at this. Yesterday versus today.
Oh, dear.
Just feminism. Gone. Overnight. Just, yeah. I love how she went with the full covering as well. Like, no strand of hair is visible. If we go to the next one, we can see the British version of this. But at least she kept her hair out, I guess. You know, resistance. Not completely compliant.
Yeah, that one just seems a bit, you know, not dedicated to the full veil, right? It's just kind of draped over the head. If you're going
to
do it right.
Yeah. At least take the CNN route and become full Islamic. But the absolute collapse of culture there, everything is being Talibanized, as we say. So if we go to the next one, we can see the mostly peaceful death chants as well, which CNN reported on. So let's play this clip, because this is gold.
They're just chanting death to America, but they seem friendly at the same time. It's utterly bizarre.
That's because of you.
They've just told me to stand to the side because I'm a woman.
They seem friendly.
Very friendly. Oh, boy. But mostly peaceful chants of death to America alongside, get out of here, woman.
To be fair, God. You've got to respect her to be out there in amongst the Taliban, an American, when they've taken over, well, reporting on the ground.
The CNN have done multiple interviews with the Taliban over the years. So, I mean, they're best friends. So don't worry about it.
Ideological bedfellows.
Yeah. Well, I must admit, there is some like big PP energy to the Taliban. They're just like woman, go. Just something about
it's
it.
Not
just,
good.
There's no, it's not good, obviously, but it is interesting how much conviction they have in themselves. Like they honestly believe in themselves in a way that is just vanquished in the West about anything we believe. Like you never see strong liberalism here, for example. People aren't that strident about liberalism in the same way they are about Islamic.
So you're admiring them for their conviction to Islam now?
The level of conviction which we don't have to liberalism, which we should. So,
so we should go on some kind of liberal
crusade. What's wrong with that? Anyway, so the Taliban have also been taking weapons from the civilians of Afghanistan because that's what every government does before they decide to just mess with the population. Remember Americans, when they come for your guns, there's another example of them doing it. So we also have the Taliban, who are really enjoying their time on social media, their favorite platform, twitter.com, in which they're posting updates here. I love Michael Tracy here being like, good to know I'll receive regular updates from the new Taliban government on Twitter. But where to get updates of Donald Trump? You'll have to go elsewhere because you can't. I love how they post in here as well. The Taliban said, the general public is happy with the arrival of the Mujahideen and satisfied with the security. Something
Do
about
they
that.
Hear that many criticisms?
They interviewed some people. I'm pretty sure that at gunpoint, if not Taliban supporters anyway, so there's that. But Silicon Valley is striking back. They are keeping a standard. Facebook is, anyway. We'll go to the next one. Facebook bans the Taliban.
Oh, wow. Stunning and brave.
I also have to wonder,
why did it take that long?
Why did it take to today? Like, you had the Taliban on your platform while they were fighting the Americans for 20 years, apparently. And then today, you're like, well, now they're in government. Now they've got to go. Oh, God. So, yeah, Taliban not fans of Facebook, but still fans of Twitter. So, the Islamic scholar, Jack Dorsey, will, I'm sure, be in contact.
He's starting to look that way a little bit, isn't he?
Yeah, with the beard. But also, don't worry, they're not really bothered. They've got their own Sky News now. So, we get the next one. Just look at this. Look at this image. There's just something amazing about it. So for people listening, it's an image of a guy in like a very modern TV set that looks like something out of Sky News or Good Morning Britain, with a Taliban flag as the logo behind him on the screen, and then a Taliban flag next to him, just presenting the news. There's just something about it that's just so absurd. I don't know what to say. Oh, boy.
It looks like something from a set on Star Wars. And then there they are.
We can also see the presenters of the Good Morning Caliphate show. So there we are. It's just, I can't get over how modern it looks. It's just these guys in mountain dress and huge beards who are the Taliban, for Christ's sake. Oh, boy.
They're bringing back the waistcoat as well.
I mean, these are the guys who beat the West. I mean, fundamentally, these are the guys who did it. Which
you need F-15s and nukes to do it, don't you?
No, you need bumper cars.
Wait, what?
Let's go to the next one. So you just see, they took over a theme park. And they just decided, like, well, I'm bored of fighting. Let's go in the bumper cars and have some fun. There's just something about it, like, childlike with these people. Let's go to the next one as well, which you can see them on these little, like, merry-go-round with little ponies. And, like, these grown men are riding the merry-go-round after their victory. I mean, this is their treat. You fought very hard, boy. Papa Taliban's going to take you out for a ride on the merry-go-round. Oh, God. It's just some absurd scenes seeing there. So they've also seen the government declare amnesty for government officials, if we can go to this story. So they're declaring amnesty for all Afghan government officials. They're not going to kill them, they swear. Who believes that? Although there was a weird statement in here. Women would also be allowed to have a role in government, provided that it corresponds with Sharia, said the Taliban.
So what exactly would that mean then?
Presumably not a role in government that isn't like the tea lady.
Cleaner.
Like the parliamentary kitchen, perhaps. I don't know what else they're thinking adheres to Sharia, but Okay. This is what the Taliban said when they meant we respect human rights.
I'm also confused why they'd feel the need to kind of say that. Like, yeah, we're a new and progressive Taliban. We want to include women in our government.
Don't worry, we're progressives. Allahu Akbar. She's in the kitchen, not in the ground. Jesus Christ. I mean, these people really are barbarians, so I'm not surprised. But let's go to the next link here so you can see. This is one of the stories that's caught my eye here. Transgender United States Air Force veteran is trapped in Kabul over all of this. She was a contractor, apparently, and is now just kind of stuck there. I don't know how they're getting her out. I don't know if the Taliban are going to give her an escort. I imagine, it's going to be a hell of a conversation.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's the end of the stuff on what's happening in Taliban. If we go back to the West for a moment to see what's going on with our politicians. So we have Tobias Elwood, who yesterday said that it was wrong for us to abandon Afghanistan, as if we stayed there 10 more years, things would be fixed. And today he had something even more weird to say. He says here, I cannot believe that this is now the sum of our new foreign policy to hold the Taliban to account. Applying sanctions and holding back ODA. This will not prevent a civil war, nor deter the Taliban from imposing a ruthless interpretation of Sharia. I don't know why people keep saying Sharia law.
Yeah, ruthless interpretation of Sharia law as well.
I know. Hmm. Like, what do you mean? It's just Islamic law.
As opposed to, the nice diplomatic and peaceful Sharia law.
The one we're enacting in Luton, perhaps. Anyway, but the again, this will not prevent a civil war doing sanctions, nor deter the Taliban. But what do you want to do, invade? And then wage war on them for 20 years? You think that'll do it? We've done this. It's not worked. We're out. It's done.
There's got to be some kind of infrastructure there to support the country when we leave, like there was in Iraq. And at least, the Iraqis didn't just give up immediately. Don't look at me like that. It's only a matter of time.
Anyway, so Boris Johnson is also urging Western nations not to prematurely recognize the Taliban. I did see a good meme in response to this. Let's go to the next one. Steiner's attack, everything will be fine. it's done. They're the ones in charge of Afghanistan now. So if we get the next one up, this is the bad news that has really peed me off. So you remember this. This was the story. The UK will waive border rules to allow Afghan asylum seekers to flee the Taliban to Britain without a passport. The context for this, when it was initially issued, was meant to be those who are interpreters. People who had given their service, therefore guaranteed citizenship, as you would say, and we're going to have a duty to take them out because they're going to be killed. And also, they did a good job for us. No, turns out it's not just for them. We're now going to take tens of thousands of Afghan refugees, many of them nothing to do with the service. Because just the West, isn't it? So if we go to the next one, because there are only 20,000 translators in the whole country that worked with us. This is Britain to reaccept tens of thousands of Afghan refugees. That's just Britain. Cuckland, we've got a Cuckadia over here. Cuckadia is also to accept 20,000 refugees. We can get the next one up, John. There you go. 20,000, even though we're taking tens of thousands. And then the Americans are going to take tens of thousands as well.
Is there anyone going to be left in Afghanistan? Is that just their solution? They're going to just take all the people out of Afghanistan?
There are only 20,000 interpreters. Numbers don't add up. We're just going to start taking people because, I swear I worked with you. And there's going to be no checks. Fantastic. This land in which we have demonstrated previously that the Taliban side of this argument are a bunch of pedo-barbarians, and the police who were in charge of the south there that we saw were also pedo-barbarians. Fantastic. I'm sure this is going to go swimmingly. Although there is one man standing up to all of this, Macron. Good God. I kind of have to simp for France. Macron said, we must anticipate and protect ourselves against significant irregular migratory flows in response to the news of you must take migrants. He was just like, no.
He put that very euphemistically.
Yeah. It's essentially the fancy French version of F off, we're full, which I love. So Islamo-Labour have responded to this and being very upset. You can see Zara Sultana here. This isn't leadership. It's inhumanity. It's inhumanity, is it? Right. So we're going to look forward to tens of thousands of people who did not serve us in any capacity. People who are not the interpreters. They're just going to be like, women's rights or something like that. And therefore be able to come over here. I mean, you saw in the cargo planes as well. They didn't serve their country either by standing to fight. The Afghan army collapsed. And they didn't serve ours. And therefore they want access to ours. I can't think of a worst policy. I mean, these people have the most Islamic views on blasphemy, women, gays, and most importantly, age of consent, shall we say. I mean, we've seen it with the migrants we have taken from the stupid idiots who go down there with refugees welcome signs at Dover. And then we get them over, and a lot of them turn out to be the kind of person you really do not want anywhere near your children.
Well, on that note...
Sorry, went on a bit.
That's all right. You touched on a lot of stuff I'm going to be talking about. So obviously, I'm going to be talking about the the pressure in which the fall of Afghanistan to the Taliban is going to kind of put on the ongoing border crisis, which is clearly going to get worse. So you may be able to remember back in 2015, there was, of course, the problem of ISIS. It's very difficult to forget. And here is a question from the EU, which is very useful, actually. So they're saying, ISIS terrorists have been using the migration crisis to send terrorists to Europe on migrant boats. A number of cases have been reported, including that of Abdul Majid Tuil. I'm butchering their names, but I don't care, the terrorists, who was responsible for the Bardo Museum attack in Tunisia of the 18th of March 2015, who killed 21 tourists. He was spotted on a migrant boat in Sicily on February 2015 and later arrested in Milan. Another such case is that of Mehdi Ben Nasir, who was arrested in Italy in 2008 for being the head of a terrorist cell with links to Al-Qaeda. He was then sentenced to 7 years in prison and then extradited to his country of origin, Tunisia. In October 2015, he returned on a European migrant boat, claimed to be an asylum seeker. In the latest Paris attack of 13th of November, a Syrian passport was found near the body of one of the attackers.
So this is the European Parliament giving us examples of ISIS keeping their claims of sending terrorists with the migrants.
Absolutely. So who better to hear it from as well? The EU, where, you know, they're very big on getting lots of people to accept so-called refugees and asylum seekers. And they're the ones saying this, or someone was asking a question about it in the EU Parliament on 26th of November 2015. So, of course, you touched on the news in the previous segment about Afghan asylum seekers being able to flee to Britain without even needing a passport. From what I've managed to gather, this was for the supposed interpreters and the contractors and people who worked with the military and our operations there. But it doesn't really elaborate on whether it is other people. And you suggested that it is going to be, and I wasn't actually able to find anything concrete. So I think
the numbers
still
just don't add up. It's just,
well,
like,
yeah.
Like, how the are numbers we accepting people hundreds are of thousands when there aren't hundreds of thousands of people?
Well, I wasn't actually able to find anything from Downing Street to suggest we're going to accept them. But I did find stuff from the Labour Party, which I'll get onto later, of senior figures suggesting we should take far more. So, where's it gone? So the Labour Party, of course, the Shadow Foreign Office Minister Stephen Kinnock warned that the intake needs bold and ambitious and generous offers. So supposedly just the 2,000 or was it 4,000 roughly interpreters and contractors that we were going to let in originally wasn't enough. So he was asked, well, what about 20,000 people? Would that be about right? He said, we need to see an offer that is also backed up with the capacity to process it. So he's suggesting, okay, we need some kind of figure.
What is wrong with these people? Like, we have several thousand interpreters, Warner. Yeah, we'll make it 20,000. Why? Why not a million if you're just throwing numbers out of your ass? I mean, what's wrong with him where he's just like, yeah, just loads of migrants. Why? Well, F Britain, that's why.
Why don't we just empty Afghanistan and then they'll have no people to govern and then the problem will be solved? Why did they not think of that? I mean,
I can't stand the Labour Party, the way they think.
Yeah, so in a conversation with a journalist, he says, as you pointed out, the situation on the ground there is so difficult at the moment that we've got to ensure that we don't open up an offer that we can't actually deliver on. So we need to see in detail the plan from the government, but it's absolutely right that we make an ambitious and bold offer. Then the Mail article goes on to say, asked if this means tens of thousands of people rather than a few thousand, he said, I would have thought so. Yes, yes, we do, of course, need to see the detail, but I think this needs to be a significant offer. So he's suggesting in the realm of tens of thousands, right?
We're not even.
He obviously is trying to wriggle out of it because it looks bad and he understands that, but
that's a bastard, though. Like, you could put it down to the guys who work with us, and then you know they're not terrorists or unlikely to be terrorists. So he's like, no, make it 20,000. Okay, then we're going to get a bunch of Taliban with them.
It seems entirely obvious, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And he says women and girls would also be expected to get special priority because the Taliban aren't exactly quite as enlightened as us in the West on that sort of thing. So may also be worth remembering the Manchester Arena bomber, Salman Abedi. So he was born in Manchester. So the point of me including this here is that you don't even need to worry about the first generation. Sometimes second generation
is even worse.
Yeah, well, this is what happened here. He was born in Manchester to Libyan-born refugees who escaped Gaddafi's regime. And he lived here for, what, 22 years? And as this independent article shows, he was actually on holiday in Libya when Islamist violence erupted and the Navy came and rescued him along with other British tourists. So he and his family clearly owed a lot to the British state or the British people, right? And then he went on to carry out the Manchester Arena bombing. So...
yeah, second generation can be much worse as well, because that's the generation that has the identity crisis mostly, mm-hmm. about, you know, where am I really from? Am I British? Am I not? And it can lead
to
being...
so it's not even the risk of just the Taliban. It's the fact that the people who settle here, who have every right to owe us, you know, for their safety...
yeah, there's a level of risk there. Why make it way worse?
Yeah, and tens of thousands, 20,000, it's way, way too much. Like, the interpreter's at a push. I mean, there is a good argument for that, in that they've helped work with us. They've put their own lives in danger. They've proved to us that they deserve something in return, and I think that would be fair. But just random people, it's such an unnecessary risk.
They can all go to Pakistan. Pakistan is mostly responsible for the Taliban. Therefore, they can take the fruits of their labor and take those refugees and take them. But the other thing on my mind is, like, there's also an argument for the interpreters, which is could you not just resettle them around the Middle East instead of moving them into the West? Which is not...
I know, there
argument.
Are plenty of other countries that are actually favourable to the West. Like, you could move the interpreters to Saudi Arabia. They're our ally, aren't they?
Yeah, we'll give them Egypt. Loads of cash, and therefore it's not a burden for the Saudis or something, rather than moving them to the UK.
Yeah, and they'd probably be happier there as well, wouldn't they? Because it's closer to their cultural heritage than the UK, although that's increasingly becoming irrelevant.
Depends on.
So, on something a bit more positive, did you know that there is a push to make Lithuania great again? And Lithuania is building a wall, and Belarus is going to pay for it.
Based.
Well, Belarus isn't actually going to pay for it, but they're following along those lines. So 6 days ago, Lithuania announced that they're just going to build a massive wall to keep out all of the migrants that they are saying Belarus is sending to them. So... supposedly, more than 4,000 migrants have entered the country of Lithuania illegally from Belarus this year. And of course, Belarus, Lithuania tend not to get along very well, because of course, Lithuania accused Belarus of flying in migrants who would head to the border. So it's not even like they got there organically. It's that the Belarusian authorities are flying in migrants to kind of send to Lithuania as some kind of weapon. And of course, recently in the news as well, they had the case of the flight to Lithuania being diverted in Belarusian airspace to Russia. And they had a bit of a falling out with that. So they're not on the best terms. And therefore, they are building a giant wall. So, where's it gone? So yeah, the actual flight, the Ryanair flight, was diverted to Minsk. So obviously the relationship between Belarus and Russia is relatively close, and Lithuania doesn't want anything to do with either of them, and it's very tense on the border. So since there was a surge in migrants, also Latvia, Poland kind of putting on pressure on the EU to stop them from doing so. So I'm just going to skip over that stuff. So the migrants have already reduced in number since the announcement of this giant wall. I think they're spending ridiculous amounts of money on it. Where's it gone? So they say the wall is going to be 13 foot tall, metal fence with razor wire, and it's expected to cost 152 million euros.
I'm hearing this in Trump's voice. Yeah. So it's going to be a beautiful wall. It's going to have razor wire. It's going to be 50 foot tall.
Yeah, so basically they've taken a leaf out of Trump's book, and they say, without a physical barrier, it is impossible to protect our borders. It is very clear, the Interior Minister said. The Lithuanian government has also announced a plan to just pay 300 euros to each person who turns up for them to go away.
It's literally the meme of, I'm going to pay you $100 to F off.
It really is, yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, that won't work, because then they'll just turn up tomorrow and be like, 300 more euros, please. which,
But yeah, the numbers have actually dropped since they made this announcement about a week ago. So yesterday, the numbers have reportedly dropped, according to info, I think it's infomigrants.net. And something else that I just thought I would throw in about what Lithuania has been up to, because they've been following in Trump's footsteps yet again, in that they've been annoying China. And this is also great. So China has demanded that Lithuania withdraw its ambassador to Beijing after they acknowledged the Taiwanese government
exist.
And they've allowed them to have an embassy in Lithuania, making it the first European country to do so. Of course, China considers the democratically ruled Taiwan an affront to their entire regime, and they view it as part of their territory that is being occupied, as most people are aware. However, the Chinese government has expressed its categorical opposition to this move, and they say that China has decided to recall its ambassadors to Lithuania and demanded the Lithuanian government recall its ambassador to China. So they've kind of had a formal falling out. And they say, we urge the Lithuanian side to immediately rectify its wrong decision, take a concrete measure to undo the damage, and to not move further down the wrong path. And to end this, I think it's worth looking at something that is entirely unrelated to the migrant thing, but related to your Afghanistan stuff, in that the Chinese state media, the Global Times, says, from what happened in Afghanistan, those in Taiwan should perceive that once a war breaks out in the Straits, the island's defences will collapse in hours and the US military won't come to help. As a result, the DPP will quickly surrender. And the picture that they've got underneath is, once a cross-straits war breaks out while the mainland seizes the island with force, the US would have a much greater determination than it had for Afghanistan, Syria and Vietnam if it wants to interfere. Or it would require.
Sorry. I love how they say once a war breaks out, not if a war breaks out.
Yeah, they're saying it's inevitable.
Yeah. I mean, this has always been Mao's position, so I suppose keeping in with the tradition there. But also, I love the Lithuanians there. I mean, just standing up to China and be like, no, get lost. Mm-hmm. We're not going to do it. And that's the sort of moves we were looking for, especially post-pandemic, where everyone needs to move away from China. We need to take everything we can away from them that we've been giving them for so many goddamn years.
I also find it unusual that Lithuania, EU member, right? And they're taking all these hard measures that we in Britain were told, you can't do these sorts of things, you can't control your borders, remain a member of the EU, and then there they are actually building a wall.
I just can't imagine, like, the border guards just literally just stood there like, I'm going to pay you $100. Anyway.
But yeah, I was going to talk more about the migration stuff, but I think you touched on that quite a lot in the last segment, so I didn't want to repeat it too much.
That's fine. But anyway, we have some good news. We have a white pill for once in my life. So let's have a free speech victory. So there's a bit of free speech victory around the Eaton case. You remember we have talked about this a lot in the podcast. We had the chap Nolan on the show to talk about his case. So this was a guy who dared say that men and women are different and therefore masculinity and femininity are different and tied to that biological difference. That's it. That was his argument. And for that, he lost his job. Eaton, the most elite institution in Britain, kicked him out. So it just goes to show that no one is safe from the realm of woke political correctness because he dared to say that men and women are different. Even the most elite of the elite institutions have swallowed this disgusting pill. So we have him on his YouTube channel. Nolan knows. Everyone should go and subscribe because he's a good boy. Celebrating his victory. So you can see the article there and him taking a quote from it saying that the agency has dismissed all charges against him, which is fantastic. If we go to the next link, we have the interview with Nolan as well, if you want to go and see our interview with him. So that's premiumcontentonlotuses.com, doing some smart shilling there. But also, if we go to the next one, you can see the video in which he was lambasted for, the evil man for daring to make a video called The Patriarchy Paradox, which if you haven't, do go and watch, because it's quite interesting about the differences and the arguments he makes about sex and gender. But the evil man, what is an example of his heresy? Well, saying that men provide, protect, and procreate. That's like one of the things he was lambasted for. So let's go for this clip as an example of that video.
In a cross-cultural study of manhood, David Gilmore, professor of anthropology, concluded that three moral injunctions seem to come repeatedly into focus. One must impregnate women, protect dependents from danger, and provision kith and kin. None of these three roles, procreate, protect, provide, is exclusively masculine, but the protector role is the least shared, making it the core of masculinity. It is the least shared because it is the one most firmly rooted in anatomy and physiology. Even in lion prides, this is very clear. Although lionesses do 90% of the providing, the males are responsible for protecting the pride. They only help kill the largest, most dangerous prey that would otherwise cost the lives of too many lionesses. Accordingly, in all cultures, war has usually been men's work. It is Gilmore's universal protector role.
So the thing I wanted to include that for, especially, is to just make the point for people who haven't watched it. It's so middle of the road. Mm-hmm. Here's my argument. It's very sensibly argued, very carefully. You can disagree with him in the comments. He responds to the comments and all that. Leaves all his sources. He's put a note saying this is not endorsed by Eaton. He did everything right you could to try and make this in a, let's say, socially acceptable manner. And even then, they came after him and decided he was a heretic.
It is ridiculous because this is like beginner level psychology teaching. Like you learn this stuff. It's like the fundamentals. Like you'd be stupid not to know it in the first week of your psychology course at university or something like that. Like it's so entry level and uncontroversial that it's obvious, right?
And yet that's haram. That's not allowed.
Apparently so.
I thought I'd give an example of a recent video he did as well, which I found particularly funny. So this is a video called What They Won't Teach You in School, about living as LGBTQI++ or whatever the other acronyms are on there. I thought I'd just play this next clip because I just thought it was really funny watching it.
Four, until 2009, the FDA posted the Surgeon General's advice that sodomy was simply too risky to practice. On WebMD, it's still listed as the riskiest sexual activity. Now, has the anus evolved since 2009?
I just love how deadpan he is about the whole thing as well. Well, has it? Has it?
Like, you can tell he's a teacher by managing to keep a straight face while saying that, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, just a true statement as well. Like, he makes the argument in there. He gives the evidence of, well, there's risk of tearing. There's no natural lubricant. It's full of bacteria. It's not biologically engineered for penetration. He's not saying that you shouldn't be gay or anything of the sort. He's saying that, no, there are differences and these are the things they won't teach you. So, again, I mean, just a completely normal, you know, middle-of-the-road, sensible man. And yet, for that is his crime. But he's won, so that's the good news. So here's the Times article. Free speech victory for Eton teacher Will Nolan sacked over gender lecture. A teacher who was sacked by Eton over a provocative lecture on gender has been cleared by a watchdog of professional misconduct in a verdict hailed as a victory for free speech in schools. Will Nolan, 35, was referred to the teaching regulatory agency over his lecture. Again, how dare this teacher lecture people? Oh boy, which is called the Patriarchy Paradox. The TRA, an executive agency of the Department of Education, can impose a lifetime ban on the profession. So that's the big win here. I mean, if a teacher got a lifetime ban for simply studying, as you say, basics of psychology, then there really is no hope. Mm-hmm. But this is good news and we should celebrate it. So in a letter to Nolan's, the TRA said, the determination meeting has conducted that your case should be closed with no further action. Done. They're just not interested. This was a waste of our time. So there is some spark in these institutions of being meaningful, let's say. So the watchdog also considered a reference to Marie Claire's magazine in which a working wife said she wanted to be overwhelmed by the sheer power of her husband's masculinity in the bedroom, but wasn't because she felt like the man in a relationship. Again, he pointed out like an article Carl would read to prove dadism, and that's the crime. That's the thing he did wrong, in which they were just like, right, this is a waste of our time entirely. So at the end of this, they say Eton alleged that Nolan, who had taught the school for 8 years, had committed serious misconduct of telling his students the basic facts about life. In his evidence to the TRA, Nolan responded to claims that the lecture was offensive to women and LGBT people, and said that it breached fundamental values of tolerance and respect. So that's the Eton school trying to say that he was being offensive to women and LGBTs. Like, nope, bringing facts to them. And if the facts are offensive, problems with you, not with the facts. Facts don't care about your feelings. Ben Shapiro over here from Will. Good point.
It's good that this kind of thing is going out in the Telegraph as well, because the kind of people who are going to be going to or putting their kids in Eton, the most expensive school probably in the country, are going to be typical Telegraph readers like, oh, that Eton's been saying that that men aren't supposed to, you know, protect people. Well, that's a bit strange, isn't it? Maybe we shouldn't send you there for £30,000 a year or whatever it is.
Yeah. So Nolan's lawyer, Simon Henthorne of Doyle Clayton. I don't know how that word works. Like, that name is so goddamn long. Simon Henthorne of Doyle Clayton, anyway. So he said, the decision marks a victory for freedom of speech in schools, which it certainly does. Nolan is now a private tutor and is taking Eton to employment tribunal. So that'll be the next victory, presumably, for him, which is to get his position back. And also they wrongfully dealt with him, which they did. I mean, this is just unjust. It is not a fair way to deal with someone. I did love that on his YouTube channel. He published this video a little while back, which I just like looks like a threat to me. So, like, I'm too Chad for this organization. So it's a video of him lifting 302 kilograms in a deadlift, which is just absolute Chad. Anyway, so I thought we'd have this story so we can compare this. This is one we can all agree on as liberals. This man said that men are men, women are women, and he lost his job. Like, mm-hmm. he was kicked out by the organization for daring to be a heretic, and he's now taking them to an employment tribunal. I thought we'd compare this to a leftist who's realized the same thing, that, oh dear, political correctness and all this nonsense will end up biting me in the ass, and it certainly has. Black radicalism is a protected belief system. An academic will argue in a legal battle against a university which cut ties with her over her racist tweet. She's going to argue that she has the right to say the N-word. I'm not kidding. This is where this is going.
This will be interesting.
So let's go to the next link. You can see what they did here. So this is the Race Trust. The Race Trust. I mean, what a thing to call yourself. And they tweeted at Kelvin Robinson, if you can get the second image up there, does it not shame you that most people see you as a house N? Right. I don't know if I can say that one or if I can say that...
Probably best not to.
Best not to. But I don't know if it's a protected belief yet. So anyway, so
maybe it'll become your right, Callum.
Yeah, so if we go to the article, this is fantastic. I mean, this is where the Equality Act just becomes pure gold. Because we've always been complaining about it as liberals because it's equality, socialist nonsense. Largely is. Except they done goof big time. So when they wrote this in England, they wrote that you also had protected philosophical beliefs. Because they didn't want to just say about religion and no religion. Well, what's a philosophical belief? Philosophical belief is everything.
Yeah.
So you've had people being able to defend themselves as being gender critical, and therefore that's a philosophical belief. I'm protected under that, and that's worked. So this lady's going to go for it, and she's going to be like, yeah, my belief in the N-word. And that's a philosophical belief. And if she wins, I guess everyone else can use it as well. So she is suing the university, arguing that her dismissal discriminated against her critical her belief in critical race theory and black radicalism. An academic movement which broadly upholds that race is a social construct which is used to oppress minorities. The case is believed to be the first in its kind in Britain. That's wrong, by the way, the authors here. The idea that critical race theory thinks that race is a social construct. No. They think race is very, very, very real. Anyway, Professor Kehinde Andrews, who branded Winston Churchill a white supremacist... Oh, boy. How does he chime into this? He has supported her. Of course he has. In her fight, in an open letter, arguing that terms such as house N are not necessarily racial slurs.
Are they not? Well, okay. Well, in that case, it must be fine to say it then.
It's not a racial slur, but instead it is a concept that comes out of the struggles for racial justice.
That is I don't even know what to call it. It's so ridiculous.
They're going
to
sit in the tribunal and be like, yeah, so the N-word isn't a racial slur. It's a description of ill behaviour, Your Honour.
So, unironically, this campaigner against racism, her words, she's obviously promoting it, but she's going to give everyone in the UK the right to use the N-word if she wins.
Yes. We are all going to get N-word passes thanks to this lady. As long as we use it along critical race theory lines. Because that's going to be the caveat, isn't it? As long as you're a leftist using the N-word, that's fine.
There's going to be a lot of people just like, well, maybe I was wrong about this critical race theory business. Well, now this court case has been won. It's all of a sudden so much more appealing.
Just anyone who ever gets caught saying the N-word publicly, they're going to be like, yeah, well, I'm a critical race theorist, so just get lost. There'll be nothing you can do about it either. That's the best part. Because if this has become case law, like for the employment tribunal, well then it's there.
Well, it's some kind of meme magic, because it would, of course, make hate crime basically redundant. Just like, yep.
Yep, there are no hate crimes. Only critical race theory statements. Anyway, so the lady who founded the Race Trust is a non-profit organization that offers racial literacy training for schools. She's a race grifter. That's her job. She spends her time grifting up, that there are systemic racism issues throughout Britain, even though it's the least racist country on earth by any metric, except perhaps, Canada? I don't know. Who scores higher on this in the metric? Certainly not the French, that's for sure. Anyway, so that's her job, that's what she does, and she's going to get the N-word into the legal vocabulary of all British people. The Race Trust account subsequently responded to a critic of its remarks on Twitter, calling them a coconut.
What?
You can see that there. They're just inside.
Did I mishear that?
No, they doubled down. They were just like, Mo, you shouldn't call black people the N-word. And they're like, yeah, whatever, coconut. I love it. I mean, I don't know why that's not part of the tribunal as well. I mean, we're going to make that a protective phrase, but okay. Oh, boy. So apparently she worked for the university on an advisory basis. She was the one advising the university on with its Center for Race Education and Decolonity. So this lady, who is the anti-racist, was advising them on how to use the N-word appropriately, presumably. That's her job.
She does seem like an expert, to be fair.
Yeah. The university severed ties with the academic following her remarks.
Yeah, I wonder why.
In a statement at the time, the university said it was ending its association with the lady, adding that it condemned the use of racist language. So, I mean, that's the best part. The university's come out and be like, nah, we want nothing to do with her. I mean, that's good. Why she's taking them to tribunal. But condemns her utterly. And then she's got to sit there and be like, yeah, well, you know, the N-word is not that bad. I should be allowed to do it. And
she even of African heritage.
Who isn't? One drop rule.
Well, I mean, you go back 70,000 years, everyone's come from Africa, but you know.
Yeah, what are you going to tell me? On an online fundraising page, which has been created, it raised more than £5,000 to cover her legal costs. I love that. All the anti-racists are like, yeah, we've got to fund this lady. Why? She's being persecuted for saying the N-word. Oh, my sister. And they're just throwing the money and being like, yeah, that's one of ours. Love it. She claimed that she was a victim of a network of alt-right activists.
What?
As if they tricked her into tweeting it, or I don't know. Maybe she'd never heard the word before, and they were like, yeah, so there's this new word. It's called the N-word. It means friend or homie. And then she was like, I just thought it meant friend or homie. The alt-right tricked me.
I mean, the only way that could work is she spent way too much time on 4chan or something, and she'd been, like, desensitized to it.
I love it. She's just like, yeah, the right wing did this. Yeah, okay, Race Trust. Boy. So the university conduct towards me suggests that academics should be looking over their shoulder before they make statements about Israel or Palestine.
What?
What? No one mentioned Israel or Palestine. Jesus Christ. Or about critical race theory. This is a statement from her. So her argument is literally the N-word is a human right. I agree. I agree with the First Amendment of the United States. You know what? Yeah, I'm glad that we're finally there. Finally, we can get the wokers to say, actually, free speech is important. And actually, hate speech is a terrible idea that will just be used to stifle conversations, especially along ideological lines. It will be hyper-partisan as implemented, as we have seen with Section 127 and all the rest of it. And finally, we have an example of a lady being like, yeah, but what about my free speech? And it's because she wants to free speech to say the N-word. That's your right, and I'm going to defend your right every day of the week. You did nothing wrong. You shouldn't lose your job, I should say. Not that you did nothing wrong. Wrong thing to do, you know, morally. But it is your free speech. It is your free speech to say the N-word, I guess. I'm glad we're finally at the American position. So there's a quote from her that continues, that is why this case and the university's role in it is not just about me and my reputation as an anti-racist. Always with the anti-racists. I'm an anti-racist. N-word. God. Fundamentally, this is an important issue of freedom of speech. Finally with her. She also maintains that the controversial tweets were not sent by her. That's the last line here of her being referenced. I find that really funny because, like, we spent the whole thing being like, well, actually, if you think about it, critical race theory allows me to say the N-word because I'm an anti-racist. And she's like justifying it. And then it's almost like she realized, maybe I'm not going to win this argument because of the paradigm I've set up in which you engage in hate speech and you have to go to jail. I mean, that's the other thing here. It's a tweet. She gets charged.
Oh, yeah. Section 127, yeah.
It's not just university. She's looking at a prison sentence if anyone wants to message the police about that. Presumably the person who was sent, but it could be anyone who sends the police a message about that. And you've lost. You and your folks set up this world. You've set up the paradigm in which we currently live. And then you've realized, ah, crud. What about the ability to discuss ideas? Maybe people shouldn't go to jail or lose their jobs over just a tweet. And with the job thing, I don't know. I mean, she's clearly nuts, but then all of the university is on this regard. She's not unique out of all of this. But I just love that we have the leftists finally on the side of, yeah, but the First Amendment, that's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
It took this long for them to finally get to it. So if we go to the next link here, this is just the last thing to mention, which is the Free Speech Union. Of course, we managed to get the Law Commission to finally agree that Section 127 is bad. The criminalizing of grossly offensive messages online, because Britain's a normal country that criminalizes offense. If you offend someone in this country, that's a crime. You can have a prison sentence or a fine or both. It's also worse than Kuwait's blasphemy bill. So we actually have worse laws than that. But yeah, if she's not found to be not guilty or guilty out of all of this, there is also still the criminal element. Because fundamentally, she is engaged in a grossly offensive tweet and therefore is a criminal. And I'm glad we can finally get the left to agree. Free speech is important.
Funny thing is that whatever happens with this as well, it's win-win for us. She gets convicted. It's funny. She doesn't. Then it undermines the entire kind of foundation of cards that they've built,
like,
this nonsense.
Come on, say free speech is a human right. Say it. Sorry, I got no sympathy for these kind of people. That's why I'm being a bit gauche about the whole thing, which is just like, yeah, but what about free speech? And it's like, yeah, you killed that. You killed that decades ago. And now we don't have it in the UK. Thanks. Your turn to get up against the wall. Anyway. What, going to prison?
When you said get up against the wall, it's a bit strong.
Oh. Well, I mean, that's...
You mean sent to prison, right?
Well, I mean, they wouldn't stop at the death penalty for right-wingers, so that's the thing. It's like, if they want to create the paradigm in which, you know, if you engage in hate speech, you should be made criminal, where does it end? Why only a year in jail? Why is it a year? Why not 2 years? Why not three?
Why not life?
Why not death? That's the thing. If you're a progressive, there is no limit on what they won't censor or what they will do. Anyway, let's go to the video comments.
This comment is for Josh. The presence of physical crystalline structures such as salt it directly contravenes your statement that there's no natural order. But to take it one step further, the hard sciences also refute you in the fact that there are reproducible experiments that can be done over time and yield the same results.
I mean, as a scientist, I don't disagree, but there are laws of physics that dictate things. But when it comes to human beings, you know, the dichotomy between order and chaos isn't, it doesn't really make sense, is basically what I'm trying to say.
I don't know what I think of that.
I mean, it's just they're made up concepts, right? So anyone can argue either side. What do you mean?
Well, his point is that, well, there's some naturally based concepts about order.
Yeah, but it fundamentally comes down to, what would you define order as being? Like, I see order as being a social thing to do with human beings. So I know it sounds like I'm changing the definition after the fact, but I very much agree with his point that, you know, there is a natural order to things, which includes things like physics, chemistry, biology, where they can't do things that are physically impossible.
But
like, that's its own order.
It's too much of a mess.
Yeah, but you look at human beings, okay. you say there's an order. I mean, you're endowed with biological traits, but they don't manifest themselves in a uniform way, so it doesn't make sense to call it an order. That was mainly my point. But I only mentioned it in passing, so I'm not married to it, but yes, you are right.
Do you have the next one?
The Sultans of Chatelet is a political Discord and podcast that's half an hour after the Friday one, and I hope I'm on the next episode, because if I am, my girlfriend might join, and it's funny just to watch her get more and more red-pilled over time. But one of the people on the Discord said they have a body pillow, but they don't have a sleeve for it, and essentially my position is, nope, slippery slope, I don't care, just, no, it's body pillow shaped, it's body pillow sized, ban completely, I will make fun of him.
Rightly so.
Based. Weavery is not based. Let's go to the next one.
Hello, Lotus Eaters. This is my first video. This is in relation to something that was brought up on the live stream over the weekend that Carl did. Somebody was asking how to quit porn. This book right here is free online. It's easypeasymethod.org, and it is a adapted method that was used to help people quit smoking that's been adapted for industrialized porn in the 21st century. Hope it helps some people. Have a nice day.
Oh, interesting.
They wrote an entire book to just say get a girlfriend.
I did notice at the bottom there as well they had the audiobook. Like, I saw the words audiobook there. Like, someone had to narrate that. I can't imagine anything like more, oh, God, really? Like, I have to do this. What if the book is also porn, John says? Depends on the voice, I guess. Let's go to the next one.
Callum, I'm on your side. Improving yourself, getting fit, becoming a winner, that is only one half of the equation. The other half of the equation is you need to be surrounded by women or in a community with women who value themselves, value relationships, value family, and are not obsessed with dating apps or social media addicts. And that is increasingly hard to come by. So I'm on your side, man.
Yeah, I didn't think it was that much of a controversial
point.
Yeah,
I think that's perfectly run-of-the-mill stuff, isn't it?
Maybe you don't need to be absolutely surrounded by women, but I'm sure that's the dream. Just imagine a Cooper sat there just like with a harem of like a million women at this point or something. Like, anyway. But yeah, I wasn't making the argument that you need to use Tinder or anything of the sort. I don't know how anyone could get to that conclusion from what I said about Tinder previously. Bunch of whores. And
hang on a minute.
What?
Well, everyone who uses it is a whore.
Most of them, yeah.
How can you make that generalization? Have you been on there a lot? You figured it out?
Yeah, I once downloaded Tinder, looked at it and went, oh God, and then turned it off.
It is a bit grim, I must admit.
Yeah. It's just full of whores.
It's just loads of, look at all these orange faces.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
There's some great videos as well. I think there's one called, I think it's like British Male Dating Simulator on YouTube or something. It's like these guys who like to do compilations of just like the worst they found as well. And you'll get like radical SJWs or like never kissed a Tory, no right wingers or any of this stuff. Or just suddenly they'll just be, you know, what's clearly a man in a dress. Like no attempt to make it look feminine whatsoever either. We're just like, oh, come on. That's Tinder for you.
The only thing you can really get out of Tinder is really good information about whether you should invest in fake tan or not, because you realize how rife it is. It's like, wow, do people really want to look that orange?
I don't know why people use it. I get concealer, like I understand why women would use that, but I don't get the fake tan.
Like, having an orange face makes you look ridiculous. I'm sorry. Anyway. It's hideous.
Except Trump.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next one.
He's the only exception.
So when they find out that you got a high midichlorian count in your bloodstream, I guess your parents give you to the Jedi as a baby to be trained in this creepy cult-like environment, and you lose all your free will. I guess those parents don't have any emotional attachment to their children either. You see, none of those kids made a personal commitment to follow this rigid lifestyle. You can't make those kind of decisions when you're two. So unless Yoda injected each Jedi with some kind of serum that makes you not interested in the opposite sex, you'd think the Jedi would have major problems when they all hit puberty.
Well, Star Wars is pro-Jedi propaganda. Like, obviously, when they're talking about, oh, you reach out with your feelings, and then there's the Sith just like, yeah, we're going to tell you the facts.
What about Alderaan, though?
Had it coming.
But just had it coming.
Yeah.
Why? Because they had one terrorist on there, therefore the whole planet just has to go.
One drop rule for terrorists in the galaxy.
For planets.
You got one terrorist, tough luck.
Oh, boy. Ugh. I love the meme. There's a guy, he's now a Polish MP, which I find even funnier. A guy called Brown. He's with the Confederation Party, same party as Corbin Mickey. If you type in Brown explains Star Wars, you'll get some videos of him trying to explain Star Wars. And the meme really does have some meme magic to it, that's for sure, about the idea of it being propaganda. Let's go to the next one.
Good morning from Ontario. The question of the day is, how does Trudeau keep getting away with it? Short answer, there are no viable alternative candidates. Our Conservative Party, the Progressive Conservatives, are led by Aaron O'Toole, the most limp-wristed neocon you will ever encounter. Previously led by Andrew Scheer, the kid that you picked on in elementary school. And before him, we had this creepy-looking robot leading our country. Remember, boys, People's Party of Canada, the base decision.
Not trying to be rude, but yeah, those guys did look a bit not right.
Just going to evaluate their entire political beliefs just based on their face.
Well, I worked on Trudeau. Man's wearing blackface, probably a bad guy.
I don't know. It's growing on me.
Oh, what is it with you and jokes? But I don't know. I don't know anything about Canadian politics, so I'm sure the Canadian followers will know more. But I don't really understand. I was going to say I don't really understand how the Conservative Party there can be so bad when you've got Trudeau in opposition, for Christ's sake. But then I remembered our own Conservative Party, and
Yeah. We are not one to throw stones over here.
Yeah, mea culpa. Let's go to the next one.
Thought I'd throw this out here as a recommendation for fantasy. I really enjoy this guy's treatment of magic and world building. It's really, really well done. So hope you enjoy it. Terry Manicor, Spellmonger series.
Alrighty.
Thanks for the recommendation.
Let's go to the next one.
Hey, Lotus Eaters, Tony D and Little Joan here with another legend of the Pine Barrens, Peggy Clevenger. Peggy was a witch who lived in Pasadena and supposedly could turn into a rabbit or a big green lizard and would mess with your crops. Peggy supposedly had a bag of gold in her house, and one day somebody burned it to the ground with her in it, but no one ever found the gold.
Ah, okay. I did wonder, because even it happened again there, where you were holding the dog up and the dog was like looking straight, and then it looked in the same place it always does. But... sorry, I'm obsessed with dogs. I like dogs. Screw cats.
My thing is freedom of speech. I just find it odd that back in the day, this made me antagonistic to the right, who wanted to get rid of anything that didn't conform with their own beliefs and standards. A couple of decades later, it's now the left getting rid of anything that doesn't conform, even to the point of attacking things they used to defend. The pacifist hippies of the left have become the violent fascists they profess to stand against. So will things swing back the other way, or do you think we are heading into a dark age for freedom of speech?
I hope not. I mean, the best example of this probably has to be the Trump movement's shift of the Republican Party on Afghanistan, for example. I saw Michael Malice mentioned this, which is that it's now become the mainstream position to just be like, Afghanistan, we're not going in. And the people who are trying to advocate that, no, we should go back in. Oh, 10 more years, bro. They look ridiculous. And they're being roundly mocked by everyone in the Republican movement at this point, thanks to the MAGA movement changing that position. And yeah, I'm hoping that the free speech stuff is here to stay.
The reign of the neocons and neolibs is pretty much over now, isn't it? Like the
get in the past.
Although Blair, to be fair, is trying to come back. He's like COVID. You just can't get rid of him.
Yeah, interestingly, he didn't have anything to say about Afghanistan.
Well, that's funny, isn't it? It's almost like he got us into it in the first place.
I mean, for Americans, you might not get this. It'll be like if George W. Bush was on the radio and TV literally every other day right now, and then all of a sudden, Afghanistan withdrawal, and he just disappears. Just doesn't want to talk anymore. Yeah, oh, he's retired. He's got other things to do. Yeah, convenient.
I think it's every current political issue, Tony Blair has a little opinion on it. Somewhere in a news piece, you'll just be reading it, and then Tony Blair says, oh my god, you should have given me some kind of trigger warning.
I gotta say, we've got the same thing. Any news piece, I've also got an opinion on it regarding Tony Blair, which is your fault, because every goddamn time it turns out to be usually just like any reform.
Everything boils down to Blair, basically.
Yeah, and this was reformed in the Blairite era, was it? Let's go to the next one.
Commissioner Rob Manfred moved the All-Star game from Atlanta, parroting dishonest partisan talking points. Why is he making baseball political anyway? Because of his terrible record. Viewership way down. Ticket prices way up. Sketchy deals in China. And Manfred has been so bad that Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders agree. Maybe the league should pay taxes like everyone else. Rob Manfred, Major League Baseball. Serve your customers, not woke politicians.
The baseball league doesn't pay tax.
Do they not?
What?
Yeah, that's messed up. Why would they not pay tax? Yeah, I also love these ads, just endlessly, just not woke politicians. I'd like to know the organization that, oh, I suppose the name's there, consumerresearch.org. You should get in contact with them. I bet they're cool guys. Right.
Yeah, that was good.
Well, New Zealand just got thrown into lockdown for one community case of COVID. It feels like everyone in our government forgot how to be normal. Don't bully me for the accent, I grew up in a cult.
Have you forgot that your government's headed by Jackie Ardern? They can't be normal.
I mean, you still have a chief censor as well.
Mm.
Did you watch the... I should probably say first, just the fact that they got one COVID case and then they're all locked down. I want to know how many vaccinated in New Zealand is what I was thinking of.
Probably quite a high proportion, I'd imagine.
Well, I mean, they're not having COVID, so presumably no one's exporting it to them. But if they are all vaccinated, just like it is here, well, then what's the problem? Trust the vaccines.
Yeah, Australia and New Zealand are having a bit of a hard time with their governments, aren't they? It's just, like, I feel like we need to cover them a bit more because they're so horrendously tyrannised for a handful of cases.
Yeah. There is one thing on my mind, though. Like, I watched the, I don't know if you've seen it, the speech of the New Zealand High Censor after the attack in New Zealand.
Is that their actual, the name of their actual position?
What is he? He's Chief Censor. That's the statement.
Oh, that's so much better.
Yeah. We used to have one, and we got rid of him after the war. That position was retired.
Oh, I wonder why.
And New Zealand were like, nah, we'll keep that. And they still have it. And he gave his rationale for why he deleted, like, the manifesto from existence on the internet. And was like, that was the right thing to do. And I'm just looking at him like, I don't know what, how this guy thinks about censorship. There's just something about it that makes no goddamn sense. It's very Chinese in the sense of just, if it exists and could cause harm, therefore it's banned. Not, you know, someone reading this, is that, you know, is that enough? In which case, you could ban the Quran, you could ban the Bible, the rest of it.
There's no understanding of the liberal practices that the country inherited from us.
And if that's at a higher level as him, like, I'm worried about the rest of the government, because it does get more and more worrying with them becoming more authoritarian and siding more with China. I mean, the fact that they, did they leave Five Eyes in the end or not?
I'm not sure. I haven't heard much about it since.
Because I think they were flirting with getting the Chinese involved in their intelligence, and then everyone in the Five Eyes group were like, no.
Yeah, that's the entire point, isn't it?
It's the group that's don't tell the French. And if you're going to tell the Chinese, the French are going to find out. So, anyway, should we go to the comments and the...
Would you be able to read these? Because I'm still not 100%.
All right. So, first one here is, I presume this is from the chat. Quote, as a scientist, from Josh, press X to doubt psychology is not a science. Had this debate.
It does say to annoy Josh with a winky face, so they're only saying it to wind me up, so it's fine.
There is a lot of X's in the chat, so... Including mine.
I'm not falling for it, don't you worry.
X. Too fast. Wait a second. Oh, God damn it. Anyway. Biden, let's go to Biden stuff. So Carl Gardner says, on a bit of a serious note with regard to Miles, if I were him, I would not be heading back to Birmingham after this. Oh boy, yeah. I think he's in, Loughborough University or something? Some advice, Miles, if you're watching. Maybe stay out of the cities for a bit. The amount of hate he is going to get from the certain communities is no joke. I have now read many, many comments from people claiming that they are, quote, in the area, and that he was making, quote, the men of Afghanistan look stupid.
How does he do that? I mean, they are stupid.
Yeah, I mean, the going on the little carousels for a victory dance is, I thought, would do it. Or the inability to do a star jump.
Yeah, the jumping jacks or the star jumps or whatever they're called. Like, they've got no coordination. They can't even do them normally. It looks like you've told them to do something that's completely alien to them in moving their limbs.
Also, I wonder what the QI IQ map has for Afghanistan, but that's, we'll put that in the memory hole, shall we? But the idea that Miles should be careful when he gets back, probably, for a while, until his profile's a little bit dampened down. But I'm sure he'd be fine.
Did he really do anything that bad to... He went on holiday there. I mean, he's giving money to
there are valid the criticisms Taliban, basically. Of Miles' situation that can be made. So for now, I mean, number one, like...
It's stupid and dangerous, yeah.
Yep, that's the main one, which is why go there, even if there's low risk. You know, you were told that it wouldn't collapse. Well, still, who cares? Like, you're going to be a problem to be evacuated. You're going to cost money. That's true. Also, he clogged the toilet in the hotel room and left it.
I think that's the least of their worries in Afghanistan at the minute.
Yeah, but still, you shouldn't clog toilets.
A Westerner clogged our toilet.
No, the hotel he stayed in. Like, he mentions in the live stream that he clogged it and then couldn't figure out how to unclog it. I don't know why.
Maybe
the flush didn't work properly.
You've got the eyes of the world's media and you're just like, yeah, I clogged a toilet in Afghanistan.
So then he went out and he ended up in the safe house. So he's just like, oh, crap. So the hotel I stayed in still has that clogged toilet for the Taliban to find? Bummer. Anyway, so
it's a souvenir for them.
Did that wrong. I don't know what people think of him. I don't know what he's like personally. There's that aspect. But I mean, the valid criticism mainly being that he would cost our country and also put lives at risk of trying to get him out when he didn't need to be there. But there is something about me that's like British exotic adventurer who's very extravagant. I can't hate him. There's just something I just can't hate him.
Well, I think it's funny and therefore... I commend it.
It's funny, therefore based. Anyway, so Christopher Cousins said, Biden's rationale for leaving makes some sense. It's not the US's responsibility to intervene in Afghanistan's civil war. True. I bet he just wishes it didn't turn out to be a massive advert to vote Trump come 2024. Yeah, because that's the other aspect here. If he had done Trump's plan, there's the argument that they could have left organized and it didn't turn into, you know, people falling off planes. But it did. So, Hammurati the Sixth says, I'm honestly not certain. I want his fraudulency to resign. Fraudulency. Okay, I'm reading that right.
Fraudulency.
Yeah. Not only does it put the woeful, unqualified, horrible Harris in the White House, but it also gets that treasonous hag Pelosi one step away from being in the same position. Oof. It is entirely plausible that she'll backstab Kamala with an impeachment, which the troglodyte Republicans will probably go with, just so she can attain ultimate power. The longer this circus goes on, the more I just want out. Yeah, I mean, I can see Pelosi being literally Palpatine. I mean, not just that she looks like him, but also that she's just there for the power.
I imagine she can probably shoot lightning from her fingers.
It's my turn. She's going to rerun Clinton's campaign, just being like, yeah, well, I'm a woman. I mean, that's going to end up being it. Because what else is she going to campaign on? I look
like
Palpatine.
She's like 81, isn't she? I'm surprised she's still in
Don't
Congress.
Worry, I'll die in office. Vote for me, and well, I'll die before I do anything. Chris Wolf says, with the rise of the Tally Biden, do you think other countries will see major instability from local forces, knowing the US is not going to do anything? Local area, I mean, I hope so. I hope Pakistan gets invaded. We can all pray for some justice out of all of this. Grizzly says, have to wonder if the piles of weapons and military vehicles aren't a gift to the Taliban from Biden. Wouldn't be the first time that the Democrats have given weapons to them. There's this theory that essentially the US government were kind of sick of the Afghan government, and therefore were like, right, Taliban's going to win, and we're going to leave them some arms to be able to do it. I don't buy this, because you'd have to be monumentally playing 5D chess to spend that much money on the Afghan government just to leave them. I mean, even in the last few weeks, I mean, the drones and the helicopters and all the rest of it that was left for them. And I'm not...
Well, the Chinese are going to pick up where the states left off, aren't they? As in, they're getting involved in Afghanistan now.
Thank Christ, that's their problem now. Enjoy that, lads. Although I suppose they'll probably Xinjiang it, so... Yeah. So Adam Clayton says, the S show in Afghanistan is Biden's fault. He insulated the Afghanis by... reneging on the deal. All the military hardware in the hands of the Taliban is Biden's fault. The speech, not including a resignation of disgrace, is him not accepting responsibility for the problem he created.
Let's also not forget that he was vice president for 8 years while, you know, under Obama's presidency when they were in Afghanistan. So he's not too far removed. It's not like he just inherited the situation from his predecessors. He was a predecessor to begin with.
Yeah, that was very dishonest of him to honestly be like, well, you know, I had to inherit this problem. And it's like, yeah, only 4 years ago. Like, the war's been going for 20. And you've been there for 8 of it, and now, what is it, 2 of it now? So The idea that he had no idea what's going on, to hell with you. James Hay says, nice to see Biden acknowledging that Trump got the vast majority of US troops out of Afghanistan peacefully, and then Biden effed up the last bit. Yeah, it's another self-dunk. Shaker Silver, Biden's defeat speech shifts the blame to everyone else. It's prior administration's fault for getting us in, Trump's fault for setting up the time frame. It's the Afghan army's fault for not fighting back. But it's all lies. Biden had tacitly supported the prior invasions. Trump's time frame for May withdrawal was to make sure the Taliban were at their weakest after winter and before summer, so any evac would be more orderly. Biden delayed was not only a logistical failure, but also the reason the Afghanis had no faith in their weak puppet government that also had no pushback against the US coming for their own deal. That's an argument I've heard as well, which is that the US said it would do this and then just reneged on the deal. Same now. Just going to stay longer.
Yeah, it's a bit bad. Like, I feel like even if you don't agree with something, if you inherit a deal when you come into a presidency, you've still got to honour it if it's done under a previous administration. You've got to keep the United States word, even if you don't agree with what that word is.
I've still seen no argument for why he delayed it. I have no idea why he delayed it. I have nothing. I've read the articles and he doesn't make an argument for it.
I've spent, what, 2 mornings preparing podcast segments about this sort of stuff, and I couldn't find anything either. So, who knows? No one's asked that question. Why did you delay? That should be what the journalists should have been asking him if he actually had stayed.
Be too base though. Why did you not follow Donald Trump? Anyway, so let's go on to the terrorist railroads for you. So Carl Gardner says Afghan asylum seekers will be allowed to flee to Britain without a passport. When one Manchester bombing just isn't enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's one thing that never really gets discussed. When we're talking about these humanitarian crises, is how many people are going to die as a result of it. I mean, we had the Syrian passport left at the scene, didn't we, at the Manchester Arena bombing, as well as one of the people being second generation asylum seekers. So where can you draw the line there between, you know, being a humanitarian and actually keeping the people who live here already safe?
Well, it's also the cultural impact. You know, it's not just the terrorism. It's of course, also the gang rapists and the crime and the cultural frictions, let's say. I mean, there's a whole list of problems that this is a problem. But the thing on my mind is, like, why not just send them elsewhere in the Middle East? It would be cheaper. You could save more lives. And we've seen this endlessly with Turkey. I mean, there was a study done in which they moved a bunch of Syrians to northern Sweden to resettle them because they'd be safe there. And someone calculated that if you took the money spent on that, it was like, you know, for every 10 guys you sent to northern Sweden, you could have saved 1,000 people in Turkey. I mean, every single time. It is just wrong on every single issue.
And if someone from the Middle East would be happy in northern Sweden anyway, I mean, the climates couldn't be more different.
Yeah, most of them kept complaining about the cold. And then,
well,
were like,
so would I.
Syria's better than this.
I'd rather go to Syria than northern Sweden when it's cold. Didn't want to insult the entire country.
Anyway. So Matthew Hammond says, all these government officials and elites have such big hearts for asylum seekers, but two things stick out to me. Number one, none of these asylum seekers are placed in their communities. Number two, there is no personal financial cost to them coming here, or they are part of NGO class that's getting money for each one of them that's placed in this country. True.
Mm-hmm.
No. These Afghanis are not going to come and live next to Jeremy Corbyn or Boris Johnson.
Well, yeah, because they live in very expensive areas, don't they? They go to kind of ghettoized poor areas, which, you know, isn't really helping them either. If they're all isolated in the same community, then they're not going to adopt the standards of the native population.
Alex Ogle says, 20,000 coming to Kakistan, eh? I look forward to seeing them causing absolutely no issues whatsoever to the local Jewish population, and in no way posing any kind of danger to women and children here. As a note, I think there's one Jew in Afghanistan. As in, like, last
just
I...
one?
Yeah, last I checked, there was still one. And he was, like, this old guy, so he might have died by now. But...
Why do they just keep one? Have they just got him and just, like, this is an example of a Jewish person?
Well, he's just... No, I'm going to say, well, that's the joke I was going to mention there, but I can't do that. I think it's just a guy who won't leave. Because, you know, most Jews have had to leave the Middle East for Israel because, well, the Arabs keep killing them. And therefore, there's none left pretty much anywhere. But there's one in Israel. Sorry, one in Afghanistan still, I think. Although, double check me on that. Henry Ashman says, of course the Taliban would say they'll respect women within Sharia. They know full well that the US will just say, good to hear, have a nice day, without looking into it in any greater detail at all. Put up a rainbow flag and the Dems will let you do whatever the hell you want. God, the rainbow flag of Islam. Is that what they're going to pull?
Yeah, you're going to see their futuristic studio and there's going to be a rainbow flag. And you're like, yes, the new and progressive Taliban.
Allahu Akbar, we're here for progressivism. Women's rights within Sharia. They're not bowing down to the West, they're mocking us. Absolutely right. What's this one? So Derek Pat says, Callum, if you check out the MED's Instagram page, they've got a picture where they're evacuating what looks mostly like women and children. Hopefully that's the trend we see rather than men of fighting age. So John's loaded up the Instagram page. I don't know if there's an image
Let's
here.
Let's have a look. Some nice red coats, though.
I was expecting like a big chunk of people.
No,
not seeing it. I mean, maybe he's talking about those pictures where, you know, the guy's holding a child there. That one. I mean, if multiple counts as three. Yeah. Oh, no, they're on order.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. Right. Although that's orderly, so that's not... what was it yesterday?
It wasn't late before. Into the day, was it?
Yeah. But either way, I'm still not happy. I mean, the argument I heard about not accepting the interpreters or even their families, to be honest, I can see some truck with it, because it's one thing to say they deserve safety. It's another thing to say that they deserve to come to your country. There's two different arguments. And if you can send them to Pakistan to be safe, or you can send them away and to put them in Saudi Arabia or something, you know, you'll pay for their accommodation, you'll pay the Saudis to keep them good and give them jobs and whatnot. That's a far better outcome, surely, than moving them to the West.
I mean, even if you're as progressive as it comes, giving them choices is probably better. Just like, here is a menu of places you can go. Oh, well, I'd quite like to go to Syria. Just well, okay, off you go.
Well, I wouldn't do that. Oh, boy. Anyway, let's move on to Eton, because we've only got 2 minutes left. Alex Ogle says, the Sunday Times has become so disgustingly woke to describe Nolan's lecture as provocative. Saint Griffin notes her agenda.
Saint?
Sien? I don't know how you say that. Is that Irish?
It is, yeah.
Oh, God. The paper is such a rag these days. Yeah.
I'm saying that because they've got an Irish writer.
I can't read Irish. It's better me to.
To be fair, that name always trips me up as well.
You got Sinn Féin over there. That's what it looks like to me.
You can't say that.
What?
Yeah, I can't pronounce your name there for you.
My ancestry is Irish. I can get away with it. That's why I keep saying Ireland as Ireland for some god.
Ireland.
Yeah. I'm not trying to, it's just down born. Omar Awad. There's no greater white pill than leftists discovering the double-edged swords do in fact cut both ways. These petard manufacturers deserve their hoisting, emphasis on the petards. Yeah, they certainly do. Tom Way, we can't have anyone awakening the masculine archetype, can we? Just like Dr. Peterson is doing. Yeah, this is why initially I dubbed him the British Jordan Peterson, because he kind of is. He's talking about the same subjects.
Mm-hmm.
Same clarity, same understanding, same, you know, calm, collected nature. And they can't dare have that happen again, can they? Because Peterson's done so much damage to them.
It is a rare thing that academics talk about masculinity and what it means to be a man, because that's typically something that, you know, your father would talk to you about, isn't it? And it's a kind of a sorry state of affairs that it's got to be people in the public eye that have to adopt that mantle, when it was normally something that you would have figured out by the time you were a teenager, because your dad would have laid down the law for you. You've got a shocked face.
I was about to end, and I just saw the comment in the general section. Someone's mentioning they found the section in which Mao calls himself a rightist. Hero of the Republic. I've got all those notes written. I had given up on trying to find it. I'm going to go get that chapter. I'm going to add it. Thank you very much to Spring Valley, Itland. You're a goddamn hero. Anyway, on that bombshell, it's time to end the show. So if you want more from us, go to LotusEaters.com. Please sign up. That's how we keep the show running. And it also gives you access to all the premium content, including the interview with Chris Williamson and Hatton Tash. Please go and check those out. Otherwise, we'll be back at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Thank you and goodbye.